Hey, everybody. This week on Flirty on Films, we're talking about the film Splash.
Splash, splash, splash.
None of those are splash sounds.
Mine was sort of like a wave. Hey, everybody. I'm Michael Flaherty.
I'm Colleen Flaherty. This is Flares on Films, where we talk about movies. This week, we're talking about a movie that has it all. Tom Hanks, mermaids, and the questionable sexual politics of the 1980s. Splash. Michael, you tell us what it's about.
A young man is reunited with a mermaid who saved him from drowning as a boy. He falls in love with her, not knowing who or what she is.
Uh-huh. Sure.
Yeah.
So, Michael, have you seen this film before?
You know, I did have a memory of one of the scenes in the film, the bathtub scene.
Really?
You just weirdly, I just had that memory etched in my mind, but otherwise I didn't know the film. So this was my first viewing.
It was on episode of VH1's I Love the 80s, and you're like, it's in there.
I felt like I was actually watching the movie, but whatever.
All right.
So it's a fresh viewing is the whole point. Have you seen the film?
Same.
And what are your general thoughts?
I was kind of excited to see it. Silly Tom Hanks rom-com with a mermaid. And then I was like, yucky.
Before you say that, I mean, aren't there I feel like there's a million Tom Hanks movies of that era that I've not seen. There's one where there's him and a monkey. What's that one?
Are you thinking of him and a dog?
What's that one?
Turner and Hooch?
Yes. Dogs are different than monkeys.
The first one he did with Meg Ryan called Joe Versus the Volcano, which I've also not seen.
Yeah, there's like a million. Are they any of them any good?
I think Sam is going to tell us for sure. But I think this was like his first big film after
We all love Tom Hanks here at Flareon Films. But I just don't know about this era. My general thoughts, I did not like the film. Didn't think it was very funny.
Nope. All right. And let's go to our first and favorite segment.
Favorite. Bam. I love this segment. Time for Sam.
Part of the show where Sam comes on and tells us some splashy facts. It's the best I could come up with. I was trying to think of other adjectives and they all sounded really perverted. So that's where I
got some wet facts.
Go ahead, Sam. I don't even know if I really want to dive into this.
Ooh, nice.
That was funny.
Okay. Now I'm looking up Tom Hanks because I don't actually know if this was. Yeah, you're completely right. This is really his first big movie.
He was on a show, right?
He was Bosom in Buddies. Family Ties, Bosom Buddies. Yep.
But Bosom Buddies, he starred in.
Bosom is ass, right? That's what a bosom.
No, it's boobs.
Oh, so they're boob pals. What is the show?
So the show is him and his buddy dress up as ladies live in a women-only apartment building.
Oh, that's pretty funny.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
This was definitely, though, just looking at it, so 1984 is when Splash came out, and I would argue that his next really big one would be Big, which came out in 1988. He did a couple movies in between there, but that was kind of like his big. Sure. Okay. So, Splash. Nothing really to talk about for writing. It's a pretty common story. Mermaid tales have been told a million times over and over.
Sam with the puns.
So, anyways, they had
Michael,
this idea.
Michael, mermaid tale.
Yeah, I was just trying to think like stories they end by saying Finn. I'm going to turn that into a joke. It's going to be great.
I'm really excited for that.
It's French, so it's fiend. So it doesn't actually work as a
scrap
pun.
The joke. Cut it.
So anyways, they had this idea for this plot. They were going around and around and around to all these different studios, and no one really wanted it until they went to Walt Disney. And Walt Disney was like, yes, we like it. But here's the catch. We don't make adult movies, and there's no way you could really make this movie without it being adult. So insert their new production company, Touchstone. Touchstone was created purely for this film, and it was the first one to be made underneath it, and it was so that Disney could make more adult-oriented movies.
Sam, I have a question.
Yes.
I thought there was an interesting story about this movie's creation, because this is a Ron Howard film, that's right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I thought he based it on a picture he saw of, like, the poolside lining that just had an etch of a mermaid. And he was like, that image inspired me to make the movie Splash.
That's very possible. I did not read that.
Oh, I mean, I could have just made that up. I don't know.
I mean, Ron Howard was really into this film. I can tell you that because he turned down Mr. Mom and Footloose directing both of those so that he could make this movie.
Damn. Yeah, Michael, I don't think that's true.
Why did I hear that?
Because, I mean, maybe he was, like, inspired to do Splash.
It's really in my mind.
Because, like, Ron Howard, I think, was not the first director even brought on officially. Like, I don't, because he, but he was
I'll look.
He
I'll see what's going on with this.
You have me very intrigued now, but. Okay, so anyways, so, they were kind of concerned about making Splash because there was another studio at the time that was also doing a mermaid film. And so they were like, yeah, maybe we shouldn't make this mermaid film, actually, because it's stupid to try and compete. And Ron Howard agreed, or basically said, hey, if you will make this film, I'll make it fast and I'll make it cheap. And yep. So that they were like, you said the magic words, director.
Mm-hmm.
Tom Hanks famously likes to say he was the 11th person to be asked for this role. It was turned down by Chevy Chase, Bill Murray, Dudley Moore, John Travolta, Michael Keaton, Jeff Bridges, Richard Gere, Kevin Klein, David Morse, Burt Reynolds, Robin Williams, John Hurt, Christopher Reeves, and Robert Klein.
John Hurt? That's an interesting one.
Or not John Hurt. I'm sorry, John Hurd.
Oh.
Yeah, no.
Terrible, but great. That's him describing mermaids.
Actually, John Candy, when he was brought on, he really wanted... I think he wanted to be the scientist. And they were like, no, we want you to be the brother. And he was like, okay, I'll be the brother, but you really should bring on my friend, Eugene Levy. And so that's how he got the role.
Nice.
So, Daryl Hannah was brought in. She was also one of, they brought in a bunch of really famous people. And then she was the one who said yes, kind of the same as Tom Hanks. Interestingly enough, she has always had this fascination with mermaids. So as a kid, she would tie her legs together and swim around.
Dang. Good casting.
Feels very dangerous, but okay. All
right. I feel like everyone else on this call is saying, like, that's a weird thing. That seems normal to me.
Did you do that, Colleen?
I mean, no, but I would have. Like, I was this close. Like, I mean, I did the, like, making sure my legs wouldn't go apart to try to swim like a mermaid. And, you know, we all did the hair thing, right?
We all did. Well, I'm doing it right now.
So, to create the look of it, they went to award-winning visual effects artist Robert Short. The fin was 35 pounds. It would take 3 hours every day to put it on. She would actually have to be glued into it. Once she was in it, they just kind of kept her in it. So Tom Hanks recalls memories of she would be like in a tank and they would like drop French fries for her because she couldn't come out to eat.
When she drowned, how does she survive?
Apparently she, because she was a very good swimmer anyways, but also because she would do this, like swimming with her legs tied together, was so comfortable with it when they,
that she could breathe underwater.
No, Michael, yeah, she was, her head was above water when she caught the French fry. They were not feeding her like a goldfish.
That's what, and then I was, that's what I was confused about. That's what it sounded like.
Like they couldn't get to her because she was just living underwater. No, no.
Like she can't come up. But she's a really good swimmer, so I wouldn't worry about it.
They put this tail on her, and she could swim so fast in it that they had a safety team for her, and like they couldn't keep up with her.
Damn.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, so this tail, the whole thing was kind of made with like more beginning styles for this kind of effect. So it wasn't made with like the materials we have now, which are more durable. So it actually started kind of disintegrating by the end. So it's not like still around, but it was a big feat at the time, this creation
feat.
Of the realistic. Yeah. So yeah. One other quick story about while they were filming, this is a Ron Howard story that I thought was interesting. John Candy was very professional and wonderful at the shoots, apparently. But then one day he showed up late, which was very much unlike him. When he showed up, he apologized immensely and was like, it's okay, but we're going to start shooting. And he said, actually, I can't. I'm really drunk. It turns out after they had finished shooting the night before, he had gone to a bar and he ran into Jack Nicholson, who recognized him and bought him drinks all night. And then when Candy was like, oh, that's nice, but I have to, you know, go to bed because I have a shoot in the morning, Nicholson said, quote, you're going to be all right, kid. Don't worry about it. And then just kept buying him drinks all night. So
party animal.
They were like, well, that's awesome, but we do need you to shoot it anyways. So Candy did shoot his scene, which was when he gets hit with a racquetball.
So, oh, the racquetball scene. That's very funny. Like, that's a good scene to show up hungover for.
Yeah, and they did it in one take, too.
That, I believe.
Was the him hitting himself in the head, was that practical? There was no trickery there? He just had to do that?
Yeah.
That was impressive.
And he did it in one take, yeah.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So the film had a budget of $11 million, and it would gross... $69.8 million. It is the 10th highest grossing film of 1984. Was nominated for an Academy. You want to know other films in 1984?
No. I just thought it was higher, honestly. I'm surprised it's 10th. But
you know, I was kind of wondering too. It was a big year though, because it's Ghostbusters, it's Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom before they realized it was bad. Gremlins, The Karate Kid, Footloose. Like, it was a big one.
Yeah. Okay, fair enough.
It was nominated for one Academy Award, did not win, but it was for Best Original Screenplay. So the big fact about this film is that it made it popular, the name Madison. It was a name, but it was such a, like, silly name. Like, and really no one had it.
For those who haven't seen the film, in the film, she names herself Madison because she sees a sign for Madison Avenue. And Tom Hanks says, that's not a real name. Like, and that joke, if you watch it today, like, makes no sense. But apparently at the time, that joke would have made sense because it's just not a name. Until it is.
So in 1990, according to the Social Security Administration, it was the 216th most popular. By 2005, it would be in the top 50.
Dang.
Okay, 216th sounds high, though.
Well, that's a lot of names, though.
I don't know. I mean, maybe there weren't a lot of names in the 90s or in the 80s.
Well, also, you'd realize that was 1990. And it came out in 1984.
Do you guys know any Madisons?
Yes.
Oh, yes.
I do not.
Oh, our cousin's marrying one.
Yeah. Oh, we're going to their wedding, Michael.
So that's one.
Okay, so the fin that she wore.
Say, though, that we grew up right near Madison, Wisconsin, so it'd be weird if there were like a ton of Madisons.
That's true. We don't know any Wisconsins either.
Oh, what a pretty name.
I like it.
Sorry, go ahead, Sam.
It's still at view at Planet Hollywood. In Disney, And the fountain from the film is at the MGM Studios at Walt Disney World. Colleen's fun fact about this is that at the time Disney was talking about doing a mermaid film, then they were working on this one. They're like, never mind, scratch it. We're not going to do two mermaid films. We're not going to be those people.
I mean, they had been trying to adapt Hans Christian Andersen's tale
right.
for many years, but it got put on the back burner.
Yeah. And it was kind of like, we're already doing it, so we're not going to do it. But then at a point they reached like, oh, well, we've done pretty much all of his tales except four. So let's do The Little Mermaid. And although she was originally supposed to be blonde, they made her a redhead to make her look different from Madison. My last fact for you today about this film is that there has been a sequel in talks for this film since 2016, I think is when it started. And it's the reverse tale of a merman falling in love with a woman. And Channing Tatum has been announced as the merman. And it was halted because of the pandemic, but is still technically considered to be in development.
Okay.
And I have two options for you today. Would you guys like a Little Mermaid fact or an animal fact?
I want mermaid fact.
Yeah, mermaid fact.
Well, it's a Little Mermaid fact because mermaid facts are shockingly hard as they are not real things.
Ah, shit.
Sorry. Okay. The character of Ursula was originally supposed to be voiced by whom? Who would be the most amazing Ursula voice ever?
Liza Minnelli.
Oh, damn it. Now I feel bad about my answer.
Who was it?
B. Arthur.
Oh, I don't
know. Oh, I did know that. That's cool.
Is that the Golden Girls lady?
It is.
Gotcha.
Also, she doesn't have eight tentacles. She only has six, but she has two human arms. And the reason is because animating those tentacles would cost too much money.
That makes sense. That was Bam.
Time for Sam. I just looked up, what do you call a group of mermaids? And a fish veterinarian weighed in and said, well, it's complicated because if mermaids are considered a fish, it's a school. But if they're humans, you'd call it a tribe. But since they're sea mammals, I would go with pods. Like dolphins.
Oh. What do you think they should call the Splash sequel?
Oh, I don't know. Hang on. Splash 2, The Tide is Coming In.
That's great. That's better than anything I got.
All right.
Love it.
I did it.
You did it. You nailed it.
All right. And now we're going to go to Critics Corner, the part of the show where we see what the critics have to say. Now, first of all, it has a 91% on Rotten Tomatoes.
People like
which
it.
I cannot fathom. Second of all, we should note that best friend of the pod, Peter Bradshaw, did not actually become the Guardian's film critic until 1999. And while sometimes he does revisit classic films, especially like in their re-releases and their anniversaries, he hasn't done a lot of the films before 1999.
Ah, shit.
So he did not do Splash.
Right.
Nor has he ever mentioned Splash in any of his reviews for whatever reason.
Huh.
So I'll start with Rita Kempley for the Washington Post. Splash, an aqua cave of myth and laughter, glimmers like moonlit tide. It's an enrapturing underwater romance pairing drylander Tom Hanks with mermaid Daryl Hannah. Not an easy affair for a non-swimmer.
Is aqua cave a real word?
I don't know.
I love
it. I like it though.
That was a great review just because of that word. Here is a review by an Amazon reviewer. P. Burns. This movie sucks, and it's not really kid-appropriate. Couldn't remember it totally from going up, but there's boobs and some really inappropriate moments. There's no boobs.
Hey, P. Burns, I got some good news for you. Disney Plus, they took out all the butts.
Was there boobs in the original?
I don't think so. I don't know what he's talking about.
Huh.
Aquacade is a spectacle involving swimming and diving, usually with musical accompaniment.
Oh my gosh, I want to see an Aquacade. Is it like a show?
I don't know. It's a spectacle. It can be. Any sort of spectacle, Michael.
That sounds...
Use your imagination.
Oh, I got it.
A romantic comedy that is as salty and bracing as a plunge in the surf, says Richard Schnickel of the Time magazine.
Okay, sure. Yeah, yeah. Mm. Here's some Janel, who writes for Amazon reviews.
I loved this movie when I was young. It's terrible. I wish I didn't watch it as an adult and could instead be nostalgic about Mermaid Madison. Madison, you could do better.
Girl.
Yeah. Girl. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
All right, this is from the Variety staff at Variety. Although the film is a bit uneven, production benefits from a tasty look, an airy tone, and a delectable, unblemished performance from Hannah.
Okay. Our final review here is from, it's an Amazon review, one star, from Law P is the name. I loved this movie as a kid. Watching it again as an adult was horrifying. It is a misogynist Bible. While it's a whimsical story in theory, it basically uses the fact that she's a mermaid to justify extreme objectification of women and male supremacy. Ask yourself if you'd want your daughter treated the way the protag, nice, protag treats this woman.
Good points, Mr. Love.
Yeah, maybe I'm feeling his points.
Maybe.
Maybe. All right.
We're just going to go over the plot real quick because it's not really that important.
Sure.
Like the beginning of the movie, we meet young Tom Hanks and his super gross brother that uses a mirror to look up women's skirts. And that's so funny that they bring it in later when it's adult John Candy.
Yeah, it starts as a flashback. So we see them as kids. And yeah, that's established that that's his trait. Why did they do that?
I don't, because that's what funny was in the 80s. Anyway,
is that actually supposed to be a joke?
I don't. Yeah. Right.
I don't.
How else would that make sense?
I literally don't know.
And then so boy Tom Hanks like jumps into the water and gets saved by a little girl who's probably a mermaid because we all know it's a fucking mermaid film, you know.
And I don't know if I followed that. Was he saved or did he just swim and then eventually
Michael,
he stopped swimming?
At the end of the film, she says, "Remember how you can survive underwater when I'm near you?"
Yeah, I don't know. It just seemed like he was in the sea and then he stopped being in the sea. Didn't seem like she did anything.
She saved him from drowning.
Sure.
We are supposed to believe.
All right.
So then we come to present day, and Alan is our main character, Tom Hanks. He owns a fruit wholesale business. Now, here's what I am blown away by this scene, is that we spend a lot of time on him at the wholesaler and like how good he is at his job. And I'm like, okay, that doesn't come back. That's not important. But then, Michael, you put the trailer in the last episode that I just listened to.
Yeah.
And at the beginning of the trailer, they're like, Alan is a successful business owner. And I'm like, is that what they were trying to tell me? Like, he's wealthy. Like, he's got it all except love of his life.
I bet
right?
there's a is lot. That? I bet there's a lot of elements in this movie that we're just not going to understand if they're jokes or what they are.
But like in the 1980s was a fruit seller was understood that you've got it made, my friend.
Or that's a joke. We don't know.
I don't know.
We don't know.
He's giving bananas at cost, which I'm like, bananas are very cheap. If you are buying them off the shelf at Quick Trip, you are not paying a lot of money. I don't know why you need wholesale prices bananas.
Yeah.
If that's not important. Why am I spending so much time on this? Not important. And then there's like a scene where he's on the phone with his girlfriend who's moving out. And she's like, do you even love me? And he's like, no. And we're like, great. We're learning a lot of cool stuff about this character.
Mm-hmm.
And then we meet John Candy, who I think is supposed to be an endearing misogynist.
Yep.
Supposed to be a thing.
I was not endeared. I feel like I like John Candy. I don't know why. I don't know.
I feel the same way. I can't think of a movie that I love of his, but I like him.
Yeah. I don't know why.
Liked him in Home Alone.
Was he in that?
Yep. He was the band that picks up the mom.
Gotcha.
Anyway, not important. So anyway, he goes to a wedding with his brother, gets real, real drunk. Honestly, I think the funniest scene of the movie is when Tom Hanks is doing his over-the-top drunk thing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's funny.
And then he decides to get in a cab to go to Cape Cod because he's thinking about that mermaid incident that one time, but he goes to the wrong place and he has to get on a boat to go to the right place, which just makes it, this movie does not seem well planned out. Like someone needed a storyboard, right? Someone needed some note cards and some, why does this thing have to lead to this thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, mm-hmm. I don't know. It just seems not very well connected to me. So yeah, at one point he's like in a tux, in a boat, in the middle of the water, and the captain's like, oh, boat's not working, and he just jumps in and just leaves Tom Hanks in the middle.
And we meet Eugene Levy at that point, who is our antagonist, and he's right. A scientist hunting. I don't know if he says he's hunting for mermaids.
No, he's just hunting for something. What could it be? But we all know what it is, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, he falls in the sea. He's knocked unconscious. His wallet drops below. He wakes up and Daryl Hannah's there. She makes out with him, goes back in the water. Great. But he doesn't know she's a mermaid yet. Also, mm-hmm. worst CGI hair over butt situation. Because Disney Plus does not want any butts going on.
Yeah, that was silly.
So I thought was a cool scene where she finds the wallet underwater and then she finds like an old nautical map of New York and figures out where he is. So I guess she can read English, which is okay. So she goes to New York and then she's just naked on Liberty Island. And what was a very uncomfortable scene for me, again, something you would not do today, where just a bunch of guys are like, naked lady.
But they also like all run and crowd around her, which is weird.
It's so weird. Like, I'm so uncomfortable
watching. Are we skipping past the best, the wittiest, most clever joke of the movie?
Please.
Where the only guy who sees her is like the tour guide. And he's like doing his little, and then he sees Daryl Hannah and he goes, bocce balls. And that's like as funny as this movie gets.
It was very funny. So she has Alan's wallet, so the police contact Alan. And then she just gets released into his care. And then she just throws herself on him. And he's like, oh, this is fun. Let's have lots of sex. Even though she cannot speak. It's fine. But she learns speaking from television later. And then it's great.
You know, so this is interesting because like we're watching this movie and it's like, you know, this character seems kind of gross because he's like, I mean, the movie is clearly like a guy just wants to have sex with a hot woman who's a mermaid, like whatever. But I don't know. It's kind of weird that she doesn't like talk or anything. But then you brought up the point is like, hey, I remember a film, George of the Jungle, which kind of has a similar scenario, but flipped. And it's kind of fun in that movie. And I feel like I had to think about what my real source of discomfort was. Because, like, okay, so, like, in the movie, in an action movie, so say John Wick, right? John Wick will murder a bunch of dudes. But you don't go like, oh, that's really bad that he would do that. He's a murderer. Like, no, it's just like, the movie is clearly just, it's an action movie. It's about, like, wish fulfillment. Like, oh, what if you were a badass dude? So it's fine. And I feel like, theoretically, a movie like this would be fine. Like, what if you were a guy who got to have sex with a mermaid? Like, I get it. Fine. I think it's just the framing. And I think, like, just, like, this movie thinks that Tom Hanks is, like, a really cool dude. And that the relationship is, like, really sweet. Like, if this movie was just a porn movie, I wouldn't be like, oh, man, Tom Hanks. What are you doing?
But I think like, maybe nobody was that thoughtful about this sort of thing.
Right. Or if the movie was sillier, maybe that worked. Like the movie's.
That's what I was thinking. Because, like, so George of the Jungle, first of all, is a little more PG.
Yeah.
That helps a little bit. Although he is naked at one point.
Yeah.
But
not like she didn't initiate him to do that.
Right. George just get confused by magic waterfall and slip on the slippery rock. And then he's naked.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think that being sillier helps. Like the heightened reality of it helps. But I think what really helps. Is that Tom Hanks, what is his character even? Because I don't even know if he is a cool dude or if he's a dorky dude or if he's looking for love or he's been burned by love. What is it? What is his motivation? Who is he?
But it's like,
I know he is a fruit wholesaler, can tell you all about that.
But his relationship is like textbook unhealthy. He's like, I just want love. That's all I want is love. Doesn't matter who it is. And then he sees a hot woman. It's like, there you go. I'm in love. It's like, okay.
But remember when he broke up with his girlfriend, he was drunk at the bar. He's like, I don't know what's wrong with me. I can't love. I'm going to be alone forever.
Yeah.
So why? Why is that?
Yeah. Like clearly.
Tell me, movie. Just give me a line. Don't you know what? You can tell Nacho if you don't have time. Ron Howard has to make it cheap. I get it. Explain it to me like I'm a little dumber. So, I'm dumb enough to see Splash.
I know we're only halfway through this movie, but that's why I ultimately don't like it. Because like I don't because this movie's not trying to be like Monty Python. You know, it's not silly. It's not a joke a minute. You know, it's not right. Like it's like haha. The situation is kind of absurd, but ultimately this is a sweet romantic movie, and I just really I cannot get attached to the romance.
This actually isn't going to come up in the plot synopsis. So I'm just going to bring up what Michael said about it being textbook unhealthy. I don't even know if it is textbook unhealthy because again, Tom Hanks doesn't make like normal human decisions. Like he just does random things that and actually I think this is true about Daryl Hannah's character as well. Like her
her character just changes whatever the scene is.
Mm.
So there's a scene where she gets in the bathtub. So, oh, by the way, the rule is she's human, but if she gets wet, she turns into a mermaid, which I'm like, what are the parameters of that? Right? Like if somebody spits in her face, does she, I don't know, she had a lot of sex with Tom Hanks. Doesn't she get like sweaty?
Yeah, you think you'd do that.
I don't know. I don't know. Not the point. So she's like in the bathtub and he knocks on the door and she said, just a minute.
Can I just proceed that with like, obviously the screenwriters want to inject some kind of tension by Tom Hanks almost catching her. So this is the very clever scenario that they've derived to get the Tom Hanks to almost catch Daryl Hannah being a mermaid. Go ahead.
Because in a normal human situation, if you knock on the bathroom and someone says, just a minute, you'd be like, oh, they need some privacy. Not our friend Tom. Our friend Tom says, let me in right now! And starts banging on the door. And it's like, get in here! Let me in! And he's like freaking out. And she's freaking out, like trying to dry her legs off. Like, just a minute! Just a minute! And he breaks down the door. And then it's supposed to be like, and the camera pans and she's got her legs like, hey, it's just me hanging out with my super normal legs. Ha ha! And I'm like, that was fucking weird. That was a fucking weird scene.
And it's weirder in the Ratchet Paul scene where they're talking about it. Like, Madison just does these weird things sometimes. Like the bathroom the other day when I broke down the door to get into the bathroom. She was so weird.
Just so weird. So yeah, and then so Daryl Hannah, like from scene to scene, and we're going to talk more about the like Born Sexy Yesterday thing where it's like, it's cute that she's so naive and doesn't know anything. But then some scenes she's like, she does have agency and does seem like a normal person who knows things, but is just from a different culture, you know? Like sometimes she's just amazed by all the things. And sometimes she, like there's this one random scene where she eats lobster and she eats the whole shell. And the next scene she's like, oh, I'm sorry, where I come from, that's how we eat it. And I'm like, oh, that's just like a normal adult human thing to say. And maybe she has agency and knows things. And then sometimes she's like, look at all the pretty lights of New York. Look at this walk sign. Ooh, I'm a manic pixie dream girl. And
yeah, like, she is just, the movie frames her as just a fuck object for Tom, right? Like she's not a real person. She's not like a character.
But how can you be mad at her inconsistent characterization when nobody has
one? Oh, I'm not. Except, yeah, I'm not at all.
Although, sorry, we're all over the place. I have not finished.
That's fine.
Okay. The other thing about this movie is you're like, oh, so there's like a mermaid situation. So what's the lore here? So I told you about the wet thing, but there's also she has 6 days until the moon is full and then she has to go back. Why? We don't know. What happens? Can she ever come back? We don't know any of this. It's just there.
Yeah, the movie ends with like a made up mermaid rule.
Yeah. Yeah. So then the other tension is Eugene Levy is going to try to prove that she's a mermaid. So he keeps trying to hunt her and get her wet. Fast forward to, oh, another fucking weird setup. So Tom is talking to John Candy and he's like, hey, could I take Madison to this dinner where the president of the United States is going to be? Now I thought that was going to be a dumb setup because I'm like, okay, I'm going to take this girl who just learned English and knows nothing about social etiquette to this fancy dinner. And I'm like, okay, that's the bit,
John
right?
Candy, she does scream in electronics stores. Can I take her to meet the president?
She loves to make dolphin sounds that hurt your ears.
God, she's so hot. The president's going to love her.
Yeah. So I'm like, okay, you know, this is a dumb setup. It's a dumb thing to do, but I get it, right? It's like a classic zany film thing to do.
Yeah.
Nothing zany happens with this. That she just goes to a normal dinner and at one point, oh, and this is, by the way, he asks, oh my God, another scene where he asks her to marry her. They've known each other for 2 days. She's spoken for 1 day and she's like, no. And he's like, well, fuck you. I'm really mad about this. And then, yeah, at one point she's like, look at those two old people. He's like, yep, they get to be together forever.
He sucks, man. Tom is the worst.
So she runs off, but then finds him 2 seconds later. Is like, all right, let's get married.
Wait. The music, when she runs off and Tom is like, Madison, where are you? There's like background music that I believe anybody would just describe as corny 80s background music of a movie. But I fucking loved it. I like listened to it like 20 times. The music in this movie is great. I even like the song.
All right, you got to play that.
Yeah, yeah. The song. Or the music I'm talking about or the song?
Yeah, the music you're talking about.
Okay. I don't think anybody will like it, but I do.
That's the best part. So anyway, so fast forward, they're at the press for the day, and she's like, all right, we're going to get married, but I got to tell you my secret, and I got to tell you right now. And for the plot setup, we have to just leave and go outside where Eugene Levy is. And they do. He sprays her with water. And this was a really, another scene where Tom sucks, where Daryl Hannah's acting her ass off, and she's like, Alan, and she's like so upset, and like all these government men are taking her away, and he's just standing there like a fucking doofus.
Yeah.
And now he's like, well, now I'm mad. I had no idea we were mermaid. I'm mad about it. I'm like, she spoke to you in fucking dolphin language and you're that surprised?
Hey, you don't know a single fact. Besides, she has a big mysterious secret. It's like the one thing you know about her.
Actually, there was this one scene where John Candy's like, oh, well, she was probably like on a boat. She probably has some visa issues. She probably hit her head. That's why she couldn't speak. And then she figured it out. She probably didn't learn English in one day. And I'm like, oh, that is actually, yeah, that's probably what I would believe. Except for the dolphin language thing. That's,
yeah.
Anyway, then I think you kind of figure out where they're, so they're in the lab. Eugene Levy turns out to not be a bad guy. And then they all conspire to release.
Did that line, there's a, what's the, I don't exactly remember the setup, but like Eugene Levy is at the dentist or something. And Tom Hanks barges on him and like, Eugene Levy, you ruined my life. Is that, I'm describing the scene correctly, yeah. Right?
Also, and, why he knows Eugene Levy's at the dentist, yeah, don't worry about it.
But the line, I don't know why, it just really got to me, it triggered me. When Eugene Levy is like, I'm sorry, I didn't think about how it would affect you. I was like, what? why would he care about Tom Hanks? Tom Hanks sucks.
Yeah, because you should, again, I think that line is perfect and emblematic of who Daryl Hannah is in this movie. Yeah. She is an extension of, she is a fuck tool, fuck toy for this.
He does follow up with it, and her. It's like he
said. Afterthought.
It was just such a weird, like, what? Why would you care? I actually paused the movie and had to walk away.
All right. And I got to say, the ending is so bananas because then they break her out and they run to the New York Harbor.
Wait, can I mention one of the jokes?
Please.
They're like, oh, we're Swedish scientists. We're the Swedish scientists you want. And they're like, okay, we'll test that. And then he asks them a question in Swedish. And Tom Hanks and John Candy are like, no. And then John Candy's like, I know. And he says something in Swedish to convince them. And then Tom Hanks is like, how did you do that? And John Candy's like, oh, I'd watched a bunch of Swedish porn, so I just know all Swedish.
But no, that was a callback. Earlier in the film, he said that line in Swedish.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah. Fuck, I missed it. But it's just weird because the Swedish thing he says, like, it translates to the last word is penis. But the Swedish he said was like penis. Like, it was like it was really similar. Like, he should have known. Also, it wasn't clear why that worked.
Not clear. So anyway, they get Madison out and they run to the harbor and they're going to jump in. And she's like, Alan, come with me. He's like, what? How will I survive? And she's like, as long as you're with me, you'll survive. Remember from earlier? And he goes, cool. Hey, you know, I'll come to the ocean with you. I'll leave sometime. She's like, no. If you come with me, you have to live in the ocean forever.
And he's new like, rule.
He's like, super cool. Not going to do that. Because that's what a reasonable person says. And I know what you're thinking at home. I said he's not a reasonable person. Well, 2 seconds later, the whole, like, all these divers are going after her. And she's like, now I'm going to be with her forever. And he jumps in the water. And then they have this underwater fight scene, which made me sad that we weren't watching Top Secret.
That's a fucking
anyone at home who's not seen it, just go to youtube.com, Google, and then type in Top Secret underwater fight scene. It is
remember the where they're drawing battle plans in the dirt and then the camera like pans over to like a model of the castle with like a train set that wasn't working.
So good. Anyway, then so the fight scene lasts 2 seconds. They swim and then it's revealed this like whole underwater city, the end. That's the movie. And you're like, that's pretty abrupt. It's way more abrupt than I'm making it sound, I thought. And that's the movie. That's fucking Splash.
Yeah. Not funny. Not good. Music is right. Great.
So we got to talk about this uses this common trope. Pop Culture Detective on YouTube did a very good video on that. If you want to look that up, it's called Born Sexy Yesterday. And it's this thing that's used in mostly in science fiction where you like have the sexy body of an adult woman, but like the brain of a naive child, because that's what men want.
Mm-hmm. First. Mm-hmm.
And the cornerstone, so there's two cornerstones of the trope. One is like, usually then they're like sexually naive, which is great, you know?
Yeah.
She's only really into me. But I thought what was really relevant in this film is the thing that they love about the guy they're with is like, he can introduce me to everything, like how to live, which is all men, but they don't know that.
Right. Right. There's nothing special about Tom Hanks or their connection.
Right. I thought what was really good in the film was when, or in the film, in the pop culture detective video, he said, the thing about this trope is it's never about the woman, right? It's about the guy and how special he gets to feel being with her.
Totally.
Being her teacher, being her protector.
Totally.
Now, I don't know if this is a perfect film for that, because Daryl Hannah, she knows what she wants from the get-go. Why? Why has she been stalking him since the first time they met as children? Why does she want to have sex with him so bad?
But same root, just because it makes him feel special. And it makes
right
any...
Now, yeah. It's just like, I think Daryl Hannah definitely knew what she was doing with the sex, but he didn't know that because she could not speak.
Right.
That's the gross part.
Yeah.
I also disagreed with Pop Culture Detective when he said when it's opposite, like women like that about men in these movies, when the tropes reversed, despite it, like in Big. But I think in George of the Jungle, she likes that about George.
Yeah.
Because everyone loves George.
George of the Jungle. Here's something else, a segue to our other segment that we call Bro Call. Hey, John, are you there?
Hello, test, test. Hello.
Yes, we hear you. Have you seen the movie Splash?
Yeah, but let me tell you something happy before I tell you something sad.
Okay.
I cooked a pie that was like 30% tomatoes at the bottom, and I did not have a soggy bottom.
Wow.
No soggy bottom.
How did you? How's that possible? Tomatoes are all water.
Oh, yeah. I salted them and put them in a colander after I sliced them and let them sit for a while. And then I patted them all down with paper towels before I put them in the pie.
Do they lose any flavor?
No, and not only did it not lose flavor, it was a pie based on tomatoes with cheese on top that did not taste like a pizza. I'm very proud of that, too.
Paul Hollywood would give you a handshake for that, John.
Michelle gave me a handshake and said it was Paul Hollywood handshake. I'm like, it's not quite the same, and then she gave me a dirty look, and I had to run away.
Aww.
Have you seen what about the movie Splash?
Yeah, so the movie Splash is the laziest goddamn movie that I've ever seen in my entire life.
Yeah.
It's like a whole bunch of 80s writers got together and like, let's make a fish out of water movie. Like, that's a romantic comedy. Well, what should we do? I don't know. Have a guy have sex with the fish. Brilliant!
Yeah.
Movie, we're done.
How does she know how to have sex?
How does she know how to do anything? Honestly, the second the A-plot of this movie started, I checked the fuck out of it. It was so lazy, hackneyed, obvious.
Lazy.
Every beat was clear, and I just hated every moment of it. I thought Tom Hanks and the actress
Daryl Hannah.
Daryl Hannah.
I got her half her name right. I thought they did a good job, but the movie was. I mean, what were they going to do with that? It was terrible.
Yeah.
I actually thought Tom Hanks was a little too big. I might have been influenced. I read, so this was like one of his first big movies off of his sitcom, and that Ron Howard had trouble with him because he was being too sitcom-y most of his performance.
What? They wanted more serious?
Yeah. Yeah, right?
That's horrible.
To a mermaid after like 2 days of meeting her.
I just feel like there are other movies that Tom Hanks is in later in his career where on paper his character is a total dick, but you are endeared by him. And this movie, he does not pull that off.
No.
Like, and You've Got Mail pulls it off. This, no.
He kind of pulled it off for me. I mean, they had John Candy there to be his anchor. Like, to be his other side.
Well, he was gross, too. Yeah.
Yeah. Like John Candy was there to be the gross version.
Oh, so you're saying they put him on screen like, see?
Yes. No, literally. That's why John Candy's role was to be the bad version.
See, that was unclear to me. Michael said the same thing, that like sometimes we just don't know what the movie's trying to tell us. Because, yeah, at the beginning, he's like kind of gross with women. But then John Candy's like his support and he's like a really good brother and he's really nice. And it's like, so what are you? What are you doing? I don't know. Who are you? Also, we didn't even talk about how they left John Candy in the lab just to like be killed by government agents.
Well, so, I mean, I did say that like I checked out of the A-plot because... When the B plot really got going, I was there for it.
You're into Eugene Levy?
I laughed out loud multiple times once they teamed up. That whole bit, it was way too short, and the jokes didn't totally land. But I was invested in the movie, and it shocked me that I was.
Wow.
I was there for Eugene Levy, even though what were they doing? What were their plans? Why was John Candy left there? Eugene Levy gives a speech like, I'm going to stop you, and that does literally nothing.
Like I said earlier, I think this movie could have really benefited from just some basic storyboarding. Like,
right.
Some like, jokes would be good.
Jokes would be good.
This movie was written one night in a writer's room, and they were half asleep or mostly drunk.
But also a sillier tone, I feel like. Like that they wanted sillier to be more tone, serious is weird.
Sillier tone, more B-plot.
Like I was feeling like B-plot. They were talking about, about maybe not Tom, like they wanted to cast other people. And if they had cast like Jeff Bridges, who I feel like is innately sillier. Like, I feel like it would work better.
So I think, Michael, if they had a more serious actor be a straight man to more silliness around him, that would work.
Yeah, something like that could work, yeah.
Or like, okay, so George of the Jungle, that's a very, very silly film. But Brendan Fraser does a real character that you care about and know his motivations and like.
Hey, Clay, have you seen George of the Jungle recently?
Just everyone should see it. It's really good. Just saying. All right, in Night at the Roxbury, when... when one of the brothers moves out to the guest house and then everyone's really sad about it and they do a sad montage, you're like, okay, that actually does make sense. It's silly, but you understand the character's emotions and they're... Oh, hello. Sorry. Sorry, John, go on.
I was definitely there for, even though I hated Eugene Levy's character and John Candy's character and Tom Hanks and his entire plot, once the three of them teamed up, I was there for it, even though it wasn't really that funny. It was funny enough that I laughed.
Sure.
Last thing I'd say is that poor lead actress, they put her through some shit for this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm going to give it a C minus, and I think that's pretty generous because this is such a just lazy 80s comedy / 80s romance just mashed together and put together in one night. It pulls it off, I think, but I hate it in every respect.
Fair enough. Thanks. That was Bro Call.
All right. So I do want to say one thing I really liked about this film.
All right, go ahead.
I thought Daryl Hannah's mermaid look was on point.
She was hot.
She wasn't just hot. When I saw her, I'm like, she just looks like a fucking mermaid. Like that, the crimped hair and that the tail looked really good. I thought her whole look was really good.
And the swimming looked good too.
I thought she was a better actress than Tom Hanks. I just found her very cute, very endearing. I don't think she's like better than Tom Hanks overall. If you look at his filmography, I just thought in this movie, I just didn't know what he was doing.
Sure. I mean, I feel like he did the best he could, given what he was given.
Sure, sure. Just he like yelled at her a lot. Why did he love her? I mean,
why'd she love him?
I don't know. You know, Prince Eric situation. I was like, is the Little Mermaid kind of a born sexy yesterday? But I'm like, I think Prince Eric is just as much a hot dummy as she is, so it kind of works for me.
And the movie is about her.
That's also true. Yeah, I actually thought the ending almost made me like it a little more because I kind of like that Tom Hanks just had to give up everything to go live in this underwater.
I kind of agree with that. Like, that's wild that they did that.
It's like, it's really about him and how he gets to feel special with his sexy mermaid. And then he just gave up everything to be a human living in, which, the logistics. Oh, and then a little cute anecdote that our parents saw this movie was their first movie date that they saw together. And that dad apparently said, you know what's fake about this? And mom remembers that.
And he says that a lot now.
Yeah.
And now
dad was the original cinema sins because it wasn't like mermaids are fake. It was like, well, how is she going to get a marriage license with a social security card?
It's a good point. Ruins the film.
Ruins it. Also, mom has told us that a lot, and now I just realized this movie came out in 1984, and they got married in 1980. So, did they not see movies for the first 5 years they were together?
I don't know, man. They're weird.
Now I just found a cinema sin.
What do you grade it?
A D.
Really?
I'm gonna give it that high for Daryl Hannah's look.
Oh, I was going to give it a D, and I thought I was being the negative one. Because like you gotta reserve the F minus, you gotta reserve the F and the D minuses for the truly garbage. But this is just this sucks, man. Like it's just not funny. I really don't like the characters at all. I mean, besides Daryl Hannah is just like, I want to have sex with Tom Hanks and be myself. She was fine, but the movie was not about her at all.
Right, and I feel like again, different times, and maybe you can forgive some of that grossness if it was a better film, but it's just not. It's I made a point to like go on YouTube and Google, like I wanted somebody to tell me why this movie was any good. Like I wanted somebody like Splash is good actually.
Yeah.
And other than reading the old reviews from when it came out, which makes me think that like Disney was trying to lunge Touchstone's pictures and had some critics in their pocket.
Conspiracy.
Honestly, it isn't just that it's bad. It is that it's lazy.
But audiences loved it though.
A lot of people who talk about it today say, "Oh, I think I liked it back then because it was cute, but now seeing it again." I don't know.
That's so funny. We got to move on to our next segment, but that's so funny that you're like, "Man, that dinner scene should have been wacky, but it was just so normal." That's such a good point.
Right? Though? Didn't you anticipate that setup?
No, but I'm dumb for not thinking that.
Why was the president even there? Like, why did that need to be a whole thing?
They really, did not do a second draft on this script.
No, they did not.
That's the thing about writing. You gotta revise. So we gotta figure out what our next movie is. John, do you know what our next film is?
Yeah, I've just found the spinner, so give me a second.
All right.
Oh, this is a good one. So, recommended by Justin Vialli.
Here we go.
The Prestige.
Oh, fuck off.
Why?
You guys just made me watch Splash, so I hate no mercy.
Oh, my God.
Why do you hate that movie?
It's like a 3-hour movie about magicians, but it's not fun.
Yeah, because it's Christopher Nolan, so it's like serious.
It's like none of the fun now you see me magic.
With David Bowie.
Cool.
David Bowie. That's fun.
Yep, he is in it.
You're welcome.
Christian Bale. Who else? Who is
Hugh Jackman.
Hugh Jackman. Michael Caine, probably.
Anyway, Michael, who are we sponsored by this week?
We're sponsored by Disney. Let's get right to the top.
Just the whole corporation. Theme parks. They got movies. They got merchandise. They got cruises. What else do you need?
If Goofy,
it's all the things.
You know what I love though is their characters.
Yeah,
they got such a vast array of iconic characters.
Deep canon. Yeah, like George of the Jungle.
Like George of the Jungle. They don't have him at Disneyland. They don't have a walking around George.
That
of the Jungle.
A shame. I mean, it would be confusing because everyone just think he's Tarzan.
Right.
Because that's kind of the bit.
Doesn't George of the Jungle have like an across? So Tarzan just has the leotard.
He does just have the loincloth, or as George calls it, his butt flap. Oh. But when he travels by plane, he's got a little poncho.
Yeah.
But most of the time he is shirtless, which I and the audience at home appreciates.
Thanks for listening to this week's Flaherty's on Films.
Stay tuned for the trailer to Prestige.
The Prestige, I think.
The Prestige, whatever. I don't give a shit.
A Prestige. One Prestige. A pretty Prestige. And...
cut.
Shoot me.
Come on.
No, I can't
shoot. Do it! How'd you like that?
How do you do it?
Magic.
I'll perform this feat in a manner never before seen by yourselves or any other audience anywhere in the world.
The audience loved it.
This trick is top-notch.
We need to celebrate.
A real magician tries to invent something new.
Go.
Something that other magicians will scratch their heads over.
I suppose you have such a trick.
Actually, I do. It's the one they're going to remember me for.
What happened?
It was the greatest magic trick I've ever seen. I need to know how he does it.
He has no trick. It's real. Every great magic trick consists of three acts.
The first act is called The Pledge. The magician shows you something ordinary, but of course, it probably isn't. The second act is called The Turn.
He's obsessed with discovering your method.
The magician makes this ordinary something do something extraordinary.
Huh.
Now you're looking for the secret, but you won't find it. That's why there's a third act called The Prestige. This is the part with the twists and turns, where lives hang in the balance.
Julie, come on!
And you see something shocking you've never seen before. This was built by a man who can actually do what magicians pretend to do.
Real magic.
I know what you really are!
How does he do it?
You want the truth.
Nothing is impossible.
Abracadabra.
No more secrets.
Secrets are my life.